is the UR Business Network.
This is Irving Stackpole. Welcome to the Medical Travel Show. And today, it's my pleasure to have Elizabeth Boultby. Elizabeth has her own international healthcare consultancy business in London, Boultby & Company. And Elizabeth's organization specializes in the development of strategies to help doctors and hospitals to develop international patient referrals. So it's a pleasure to welcome you to the Medical Travel Show, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much, Irving.
So to give our audience an idea, how did you become interested in international healthcare?
I think probably a bit like most people, I fell into it. I arrived in the UK back in 1987. I'm from Australia, if you hadn't guessed. And I landed a job at one of the major insurers called Bupa. And I'm an accountant by background. And having moved to Bupa, I then moved into hospital management and then into a general management role within hospitals. And my exposure to international patients, as we called it back then, started in about 1990.
Well, that's quite a background. And that experience through insurance and through the provider side must give you an excellent perspective on international business.
It certainly does. I mean, it certainly helps when you're in front of clients that you don't promise something that's not operationally possible to deliver. I've seen that mistake quite a few times. People have overpromised and then haven't been able to deliver on what they've said they would, or the process just doesn't fit into the current hospital operating.
Right. So which regions, where do you tend to work, Elizabeth? Where are the consumers of British healthcare coming from?
I've worked in a lot of places, but by far and away, the largest number of patients into the UK come from the Middle East, and primarily the Gulf countries of the Middle East. So that's Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates, and Qatar. There is a little bit of work that comes from Saudi, that tends to be a bit more difficult to get hold of. Alongside that, there's always been good flows from Greece and Cyprus, although the recent economic recession has caused a lot of that to dry up, although Cyprus is now back on the radar again. And, of course, everybody's looking at the new markets of Russia and China. But for London, the Middle East market is by far and away the largest group, probably, I would say, around 90% of the international patients.
So those consumers from those markets, the Middle East markets that you mentioned, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, and Saudi, these consumers are coming from a place where presumably they can afford to go to London and pay London prices, yes?
Yes, but although a lot of the people who do come can't necessarily afford the treatment. And what happens in those particular countries is that their governments will sponsor them abroad for treatment. So they'll pay their airfares, their accommodation for accompanying relatives, and for their medical costs where they can't be provided with the appropriate specialist care in their own country.
And is the infrastructure, is the appropriate specialist care in the source locations, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Saudi?
I think one of the things to think about those markets is because they're building some fantastic new hospitals and you can look at it and say, wow, that's amazing. But in reality, each of those individual countries don't really have a critical mass of a population to really have the doctors to retain their interest in the very specialist areas. So, for example, something very specialist like epilepsy surgery, a surgeon needs a minimum of about 12 patients per annum to maintain skills to operate on those. These countries don't have a sufficient population to maintain those sorts of levels. And that's the same with a lot of specialties. So over the last 30 years or so, the types of patients coming out of this region, well, they started at very much secondary care. Now it's at very much the tertiary care level.
Very interesting. So there is, and probably will continue to be, demand from foreign countries, foreign destination, foreign source locations for UK services because of the hyper-specialization that exists in a developed market like the UK.
Yes, but what I would also say is that there is a lot of competition, and the two major competitors for the UK market as Germany and the USA, and a lot of new entrants are now playing around the edges, picking up the odd patient here and there. But the top three countries are still the UK, Germany, and the USA.
What do you see in your practice? What do you see as the major obstacles to increasing the flow of consumers from these countries that you've mentioned into the UK?
They all have strategies, usually 2030 visions, to stop patients going abroad, to build new hospitals, to recruit specialist staff. So they all have those visions to do that. But again, we do come back to the whole issue of critical mass of population.
Right.
We also have very low confidence amongst the nationals of those countries in their local healthcare services. There was a Gallup poll done in 2011 that showed that 65% of Kuwaiti nationals would prefer treatment abroad.
Wow. 65%?
65%. The lowest of the countries was Saudi Arabia, where it was 35%.
Oh, my.
but given that Saudi's got a population of around 18.7 million, you know, that's 6.5 million people who would still prefer to have treatment abroad if they needed it.
Exactly. So how do these consumers find their way to the UK? Is the sourcing of services intermediated? Is there an agent such as yourself, or does the embassy handle it?
Most of the Gulf countries will all have a health office that is in the UK, USA, or Germany for that matter. So they all have health offices, but the health office really is to help in the administration of the patient. The decision as to where the patient will go for treatment or to which doctor will go for treatment, 85% of patients will have a named doctor or a named hospital before they leave the country.
Wow.
So the paper, and that's approved either via a variety of different, let's call them international patient boards that will meet on a weekly basis, sometimes twice weekly, and they will go through an approval process. Now, in Kuwait, that sends something like 2,500 patients abroad every year, I think it is, that's only 10% of the applications that they have. So they're only approving 10% of the total applications for people to go abroad, but they will then, 80% of those will then have a named doctor or hospital.
Wow. How do these consumers discover the names of the doctors or hospitals?
They will be given a piece of paper with their approval to fly, so to speak, that will have the named hospital and doctor on it, with the arrangements being made by the local health office in London for their appointments.
So it's the health office in London that has the most influence with regards to which hospitals, which doctors receive the referrals?
Well, no, not necessarily, because as I said, 85% of them will already have a named doctor or a named consultant before it gets to that health office.
How do the consumers discover, how do the consumers learn the names of those doctors so that they're armed ahead of time with that name?
It will be on their approval papers.
Okay. So
that's not to say it can't be changed, but that it is on their approval papers.
I see. And how do consumers in these source locations, how do they develop their awareness of the names of doctors or the names of hospitals in the UK so that they then know to ask for them?
Well, in Kuwait in particular, they sit round and they talk, and they talk and they talk and they talk. In the United Arab Emirates, it's a slightly more complicated process in that the local doctors in the United Arab Emirates aren't allowed to refer to a particular doctor, and it's all done through the International Patient Center.
Interesting. So even if there's a doctor, so if there's a doctor in UAE, say a cardiologist,
yes,
that has a patient with a particularly challenging cardiac anomaly.
Yes.
And he knows that there's a specialist on Harley Street that deals with this particular anomaly. That doctor in the UAE is not allowed to refer the patient to that doctor on Harley Street?
Not if it's going to be a government-sponsored patient. Mm. They're allowed to refer it to a specialist center abroad.
Interesting.
However, in Kuwait, they can refer to a named doctor.
Mm-hmm.
As in, they can in Qatar as well.
Uh-huh. So
it's just UAE. I think the UAE had concerns of bribery and corruption.
I see. Do you discover in your work, is there much of that going on?
There's a lot of talk about it, but I've been working in this market now for 18, 20 years, and I've never really seen it. I mean, you might get the odd doctor requesting, a trip to London or whatever, but I've never had anybody overtly say for referrals, we want a payment.
Well, we see doctors requesting the odd trip to London in many parts of the world. I don't think there's anything unusual about that. Who doesn't want to go to London?
Yes. Well, tie it in with some education and it might be appropriate.
Exactly. Well, do you see the demand for services in the UK? Do you see it growing or is it staying the same or do you see it ultimately declining?
I think what's happened is that there has been a change in the mix of patients. I don't think certainly we're getting the same volumes that were coming through, let's say, in the 1970s, because you had all of the secondary and tertiary work back then. But I would say over the last 10 years, the volumes have, well, actually, let's put it this way. The income has gone up, and it's very difficult to get volume data. But I believe the volume has stayed round about the same, maybe reduced a little, but income has gone up substantially because the patients that come are so much more complex.
I see. And those complex cases are adding to the practices of these tertiary and quaternary specialists in the UK.
That's correct.
Is there hope then that the UAE or Kuwait or Qatar or Saudi can develop the highly specialized tertiary services? Does it look, in your opinion, that there's any center or group in the Middle East at all that could develop a localized regional capacity in that regard?
I think if they were prepared to join up and talk to each other and function together, they would possibly have a critical mass of a population within the region. The difficulty is that they don't.
Mm.
And take, for example, in Qatar at the moment. Now, Qatar claims a population of 2 million. That sounds quite good. But actually, when you look at it, only about 300,000 of that population is nationals. And so 1.7 million is expatriates, of which by far and away the vast majority are males who are living there by themselves, who, if they fall ill, will have their visa revoked because they can no longer work and they will be returned home. So you're essentially providing a tertiary service to the national population of 200,000.
Mm-hmm.
So at the moment, they're about to open in early 2015 a 399-bed specialist women and children's hospital.
Oh, my.
For a population of 200,000. Let's say half of that's women. And, well, actually, it's going to be a bit less than that. I can't remember exactly how many children they've got, but the children proportion is high. In Abu Dhabi next door, only 1 hour's flight away, they're building the Al Jalala Specialist Children's Hospital, which is also about 300 beds. So there is really no joined-up thinking, and they're all seeking specialists from a wide range of places. Now, people with that level of expertise are not in, they're hard to come by.
Yes, indeed.
So that's going to continue to be a problem. In Oman, for example, they have to train 100 doctors every year, 100 specialist doctors every year for the next 26 years to have a national doctor population to meet the demands of their population forecasts.
And in the meantime, where do Omanis go for care?
India. A lot are going to India. Some go to Germany. They have done quite a lot of development, but they still are going out to mainly India and Germany. A few, the VIPs come to London.
This is a fascinating picture because you're really highlighting several issues. One is economics, but more fundamentally, the issues around availability, capacity, and access. And these are, I like to think of them as hydraulics, where there's pressure on one side of an international border and no access to care that builds the pressure. And so the individuals will go and seek care wherever they believe they can find it. And the capacity of individual countries, if you build up too much capacity in a particular place, that still isn't going to be sufficient to increase the activity in that particular place. Like, for example, you raise the issue of the pediatric center in Abu Dhabi, as well as a pediatric center in right next door.
These and two, one in Saudi.
Right. So these three centers are serving populations that are insufficient to serve one of the centers, given the capacity and size of it.
Yes.
So what would happen with all of this capacity, in your opinion, Elizabeth, when over time there's inadequate throughput, there's inadequate consumers utilizing or healthcare consumers utilizing it?
Well, these, of course, are all government-sponsored hospitals. So, of course, they will never be a failure.
Because that would be politically...
You understand what I mean.
Yeah, that would be politically unacceptable.
Yes. Yes, very much so.
Right. There's no failures.
I mean, if you look at, Saudi Arabia, I mean, they announced in 2011 the building of 121 new hospitals. I mean, that's a phenomenal number.
Quite a lot of construction jobs, though.
There is a lot of construction jobs, obviously, yes. But that's just a massive number. And that's the sort of... thing that's going on all over the Gulf region. Cleveland Clinic are about to open their 350-bedded hospital in Abu Dhabi early next year. So, it just goes on and on and on.
So Cleveland Clinic has been very active internationally, hasn't it?
They have, yes. Although from a capital perspective in Abu Dhabi, all of the money, the capital money there, has been put up by the Abu Dhabi government.
Mm-hmm. And if,
I believe.
And if these centers indeed are all developed, and I believe that they will be, I mean, we've seen what's happened in Dubai. If all of these centers are developed and they sit basically empty, doesn't that create a secondary problem?
I don't know that they will necessarily be empty because there's no real primary care in the Gulf countries. They're looking at how they develop and implement, and there's lots of projects that have gone on. In fact, I seem to recall when I first went out 18 years ago, they were going to look at primary care. But people pile up at the hospital, irrespective of what it is. So they will end up in a hospital somewhere, without having the need to visit a GP. So
right.
I think a lot of the primary care things will end up being pushed through these hospitals.
What are the positive things that have been done in the UK to attract international health and medical travelers? And what are some of the obstacles that international travelers face accessing UK healthcare?
I think there's probably very few hospitals in central London, which is where by far and away the majority of these patients come to. I would say that there are very few hospitals in London that don't have interpreting services, patient liaison staff, halal food, Arabic TV, newspapers, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So a lot of work's gone into the services around the clinical care to make sure that the patients are comfortable and that their overall experience is good. I think the difficulties, the Arabic patients can be very demanding. They can request a long time between post-discharge and going home, so they can stay at the government's expense mm-hmm. in London for a lot longer, mm-hmm. which, of course, their health office doesn't like.
Mm-hmm.
They can request multiple appointments with other doctors, which, of course, the health office also doesn't like, especially if the doctor goes ahead and complies with the patient request. And it's very difficult when you've got a patient sitting in front of you to say no. So there is always that balancing act between who is the customer. We've got a patient, but our patient's not always necessarily the customer in this mm-hmm. instance.
Mm-hmm. Well, the UK is in love with its National Health Service. The citizens hold it in high regard, and the National Health System, National Health Service, has done a good job of adjusting capacity to the demand, so that as demand rises, the NHS adds capacity, and as demand contracts, the NHS takes capacity offline, which of course makes tremendous sense. Where does this private foreign demand fit in? Is it all going to private hospitals, or is some of it going to private units within NHS hospitals?
Both. It's going to both. I mean, what I would say is that the private units within NHS hospitals are relatively small. So, you know, none of them have got very big units within their hospitals, whereas obviously within the private sector, you've got much more capacity. I think one of the things within the NHS hospitals is you've got all of your doctors that are specialist in that hospital on site, or their junior staff all the time, and you have rapid access to ITU.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some private hospitals in London that if you became seriously ill, you would have to be transferred to an NHS ITU because they wouldn't have the capacity, or sometimes if they've got the capacity in their ITU, there's no expertise in that particular area.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the very complex work will still go to an NHS private unit.
Interesting. And you've raised such good issues, Elizabeth, and I'm sure that I would welcome the opportunity to have you back on another show to talk further about the UK's response to the demand from the Middle East and other locations as well. If our audience, if any of our audience wants to reach out and be in touch with you, how would they do that? What's the best way to reach you, Elizabeth?
I would suggest do a quick search for me, Elizabeth Boultbee. That's Boultbee on LinkedIn.
Excellent. Well, once again, I want to thank you, Elizabeth, for taking the time out of your extraordinarily hectic schedule to be with us on the Medical Travel Show. This is Irving Stackpole. Thank you for listening.
This is the UR Business Network.